So consider the streams of information generated each day, each hour, each second from the infinite channels of the global internet. Consider the channels represented simply by that hot platform of the moment called Twitter. From its beginnings as a little status message tool signifying moods or shopping lists, Twitter has become an instant historical narrative of disasters like the earthquake in Haiti, political upheavals like last year's elections in Iran. But what to preserve here? How do we look back on something like Twitters and tweets and make any historic significance out of all of it? The Library of Congress announced yesterday that it would archive Twitter feeds, all of the tweets ever made, back to the company's founding in 2006. But preserving all of this text is just the beginning. Joining us now is Marilyn Johnson, journalist and author of the book, This Book Is Overdue, How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us All. Good morning, Marilyn.
Good morning.
So, you know, preserving is one thing, and that seems relatively straightforward, although it does involve a lot of disk space. But how do you make an archive of Twitter feeds and individual tweets that's useful for historians?
You make it searchable, you make it accessible, and you save it. I mean, I think it's a wonderful thing that they're doing, the Library of Congress. Library of Congress plus Twitter forever.
Is Twitter searchable right now?
Twitter is supposedly searchable as of yesterday by Google. You can go on Google, and they're having initiatives there. But the fact that someone is, that an institution is preserving all of this, all of the public tweets, not the private ones, are the ones that people mark as private.
All right. Adam Ostra also joins us here. He's editor-in-chief of Mashable.com. We learned yesterday that Twitter has some idea that it's going to be able to put ads in tweets. How does that change the content from the perspective of historians?
Well, Twitter launched something called Promoted Tweets, which essentially takes regular tweets that brands like Starbucks and Best Buy and Virgin America are already putting on Twitter, and puts those on top of search results. So if you're searching for, say, coffee, you might see a tweet from Starbucks about a given promotion. Those are already existing public tweets that anyone can access and search and find. And those will also be accessible in the Library of Congress feed because they are just regular tweets that a sponsor is paying a little bit of extra money to have show up in search results.
But for historians, would that be the equivalent of searching through Thomas Jefferson's letters and finding ads for magazines and, you know, bicycles and that sort of thing?
Similar. I mean, I think you'll look back 10, 15, 100 years from now and see, you know, what type of things companies and brands were advertising on Twitter and how they were describing their products and selling them to people in 140 characters, if that's something that even is relevant 100 years from now.
Well, Adam Ostra mentions the 140-character limit of individual tweets. Marilyn Johnson, that's, you know, my sort of puzzle with all of this. An individual tweet has almost no context to it. It seems to me historians would need to see things unfolding over time. And to assure the identity of individual tweets, how are they going to be able to do that?
Well, Twitter has the verified accounts, which is for people like Elizabeth Taylor or Barack Obama. They actually have verified that these are accounts held by the people. So there's something of that. But as far as the context goes, a lot of Twitter is conversation. Twitters that go back and forth, and people who use the hashtags to track a conversation through time are basically, you know, providing a context to there.
So for historians, the way to think about this is not to compare it to, say, long, beautiful, wonderful letters of John Adams to his wife. It's more to think of it in terms of overheard conversations in times of stress and historical interest that give a sense of sort of the vernacular of the times.
Well, it's how we live. You know, it's what people say when they're standing in the bank line or standing in the Starbucks line. And I think these are fantastic things to save because when you look back on colonial times, there's a diary of a midwife, and it's just jotted little notes. People have gone back and parsed that and figured out things about the economy, about the daily life, about the, you know, the things that happen that matter ultimately in terms of providing a context.
And indeed, the people who wrote those diaries didn't necessarily intend that they would be for the ages to read. That's what's really interesting historically about them. Marilyn Johnson, journalist and author of This Book Is Overdue, How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us All.
Adam Ostro, do you tweet?
I do.
Do you remember all of your tweets when you want them all to be read someday by someone in the Library of Congress?
I do try and think of my tweets in a sense that they are something that I would not mind anyone seeing now or in the future. I do like to think of them that
way. Writing for history.
A little self-editing there. So, Adam, do you think Twitter is going to be able to make money on these new ads? There's a bit of history.
I think it's interesting because brands have already been using Twitter extensively. There's hundreds, if not thousands, of big brands already on Twitter. And people have been willfully following them. So they haven't been paying anything to use the service so far. And now they can just spend a little bit more to get extra access and more eyeballs when people are searching for different things. So I think it has a lot of potential and could be finally the revenue stream that they're looking for.
Well, if Twitter can make money, that's a historical milestone in and of itself. But the history in all of those tweets since 2006 is certainly exciting to historians. Marilyn Johnson, journalist and author of This Book Is Overdue, How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us, was with us. Also, Adam Ostro, editor-in-chief of Mashable.com. Thanks a lot, guys.